afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Thursday, June 23rd, 2022. Good afternoon, Dave.
Good afternoon, Melody, and happy National Pink Day. Did you know that it was Pink Day?
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Pink is not one of my favorite colors.
Oh, it's my daughter's favorite. Yes. It's also National Hydration Day, so drink plenty of water.
Okay, we'll do so. And it is really important to drink lots of water. When you don't drink and have enough water, it's amazing how tired and all these other things that can creep in. And, you know, you can't figure out what's going on, and just drink some water and it might take all those things away. So, but anyway, drinking water didn't help gold today. It was more of a shrinking violet. With lack of hydration, gold today was down 1190. But you know what? It was up most of the day. We had a high of 1848. But here in the, you know, afternoon trading, it sank to 1827. Silver's holding at 21.09. Platinum was down 2% at 919. Palladium was down 1%, 1,926. So, yes, we had a stronger dollar. 0.13 at 104.33, and crude oil was down another 2.25 at 103.92. Now, the paper markets, they were down most of the day when we saw gold doing well, and then it reversed itself. So the Dow was up 194 points, 30,677. S&P was up 35. 3,795. The NASDAQ was up 179, 11,232. Asia markets were positive across the board. Europe is having some really bad, bad days in their stock markets. They're all negative. Most of them were under 1%, except Germany. They were down 1.75%. They're all getting beat up bad in Europe. And 10-year yield, 3.09. So we've seen that come down quite a bit. And all the oils were down. Natural gas was down big on 9%, $6.22. So that's a big drop when it hit 3. So not quite sure. I guess, Dave, a lot of it is profit-taking. I guess a lot of it is, you know, just I don't know why the oil is changing. I don't know when option expirations happen.
They're heeding the president's call?
Highly unlikely. Highly unlikely, because that wasn't I mean, really, it isn't the oil companies that, you know, are the real reason why it went up. It's just not they're gouging us. There's a lot of fundamental reasons why the oil prices went up. So, no, highly unlikely that. Although, they were meeting in D.C. today. I think there was, what, 7 big oil companies or executives were meeting at the White House today. So maybe that gave the markets a little bit of I feel good, something's going to change and whatnot. Who knows? But mortgage rates, so we're seeing that they're moving up again. Freddie Mac said the 30-year rate ticked up to 5.81% this week from last week's 5.78. Last week's average jumped more than a half a point from the week before. And, of course, we're going all the way back to November 2008 when we've seen these high interest rates on a 30-year mortgage. So just a year ago, they were 3.02. So you hear the discussion out there, Dave, oh, well, you know, it's really not that much. And, you know, we used to be a lot higher. But, yeah, well, there's a lot of things have changed differently, too. Last week, we all know that the Fed raised their Fed funds rate by 0.75%. And this was the biggest hike since 1994. So we'll see where this all heads, and, you know, where it goes next, Dave.
That's true. We will. And these higher borrowing rates do appear to be slowing the housing market. Talked a little bit about yesterday. Sales of previously occupied homes here slowed for the fourth straight month. Record high prices, climbing mortgage rates, all discouraging house hunters these days. Existing home sales fell 3.5% virtually last month. And even as the sales slowed, home prices keep climbing. National Association of Realtors average about 408,000. That's the median home price. That's up 15% in just a month. Oh, no, I beg your pardon. That's from last year at that time as well. Mortgage applications down more than 10%. Refinancing's off 77%. Having a big impact, and it likely is going to get worse before it gets better, Melody.
Well, we also had the jobless claims. They were down a little bit for state unemployment benefits. So the initial claims fell by 2,000 to 229,000 for the week that ended last week. They've been kind of treading water since they had tumbled to a 53-year low of 166,000 in March. And again, these are mid-signs of some cooling in the labor markets. There have been some reports of job cuts, mostly in technology and housing sectors. And I've seen a bunch today. I think we're going to, not a bunch, but we've seen Tesla and some other ones I saw were beginning to lay people off. United Airlines.
Yeah.
So 12% of domestic, and the airlines are in deep doo-doo, but hey, they'll ask the government for some more money, and most likely they'll get it. But Now, this is my own personal opinion. I wouldn't trust flying in today's world, where the pilots are flying so much overtime and so forth. And I mean, that's just. I hope nothing happens, but the overall labor market, however, remains still tight. There were 11.4 million job openings at the end of April. So nearly two openings for every unemployed person. So you should get out there and fill those jobs, Dave.
Yeah, these economists are saying that claims would need to rise above 250,000 to help bring labor demand and supply back into balance to start the team. Wage inflation. Not sure when that's going to happen. It might happen sooner than later, though. We'll see soon enough as the Fed continues to overreact or react lately, and or both. Again, they raised rates, and their benchmark Fed funds rate. 0.75 percentage point last week, 150 basis points. It's up since March. So we'll see how that dampens the labor market in the coming months and to what extent they're going to overshoot that. Now, next week's report on continuing claims, jobless claims, are going to shed more light on June's unemployment June's jobs report. Economy added 390,000 jobs, the government says, in May.
All right. I'm a little not sure on this one. The U.S. Department of Education has agreed to cancel the student loans of about 200,000 people. They brought a class action lawsuit against the government claiming they were stuck with federal debts from schools. Well, government has already approved, what, $35 billion in loan forgiveness, school loans? It's just it. But anyway, the part that I'm not sure of, under the terms of the Sweet versus Cardona settlement, the Education Department will immediately approve $6 billion in debt forgiveness. So this was a lawsuit against the government?
Yes. Brought against the Trump administration by these bars who went to these one, I think they're about 150 schools, most of them profit, for profit. So it used to be called Sweet versus DeVos, Betsy DeVos, Trump's Secretary of Education. But after Cardona became Secretary under Biden, they changed the name. But
well, what did the administration do?
Well, they just they wanted the loans forgiven. The only thing you could say the government did was they were collecting on these loans to these institutions that people complained they were either getting bogus educations or they were overcharged.
So this really sets a precedence for anybody who doesn't want to pay back their school loan debt to say, well, let's do a lawsuit and, you know, hey, I was overcharged and blah, 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 and so forth. Wouldn't it set up a precedence for this?
It could. I don't think necessarily. I mean, these lawsuits, I mean, in theory, are fact-based. And, you know, when there's so many like-minded or similar type plaintiffs, you still got to prove. I mean, you've got to go through a lot of discovery with your lawyers and the defendant's lawyers to prove your case. So I think it's we can all argue, yeah, that, you know, a $60,000 a year private education is too expensive, and a $25,000 or $30,000 a year public school is too expensive. But you agreed up front to pay them, to buy. You know, I mean, you're a consumer in that transaction, if you will. So now it may be a little bit different if, you know, certainly if you were misled by the schools and got a piece of paper that's not worth anything because, I don't know.
Well, this is mainly really it's an election year, because the thing of it is it didn't go to court. I mean, this is an agreement that the Secretary Card. Yeah, it's a settlement to relieve these people's claims, to resolve these claims without even going to court over it. So why wouldn't the government be a little more
court.
Protective of the taxpayers of this country? Oh, they settled out of court, didn't they?
Yeah, but they were in court for many months, not longer. It's just that
it wasn't decided. Why isn't our government standing up for the taxpayers that have to pay for this? They should go all the way through and let a jury decide. Instead of being an election year as a, you know, now we're going to cancel 200,000 borrowers' debt along with the ones that we've already canceled to the tune of $30-35 billion. Let's add another $6 billion to the tune of things. I mean, it's ridiculous, and it's all in the taxpayers' back. And these are the people, the debt that we're canceling, what are they going to do for future societies? You know, if they can't pay their own, at least, you know, if they can't pay their own debts that they agree to and so forth, what's their future looking like? You know, if they can't be responsible enough to pay their own debt and make their government and their fellow taxpayers pay their bills. To me, it's very frustrating. And again, it's all done election year. It's all done for, you know, pats on the back and to get votes. And that's what it's for. And if they forgive $50,000 in federal loan debt, like some of these other majority leaders want done, it's just so wrong. It's just so wrong.
But how do you really feel?
Well, it is wrong. And I can't imagine, you know, how anybody could applaud this decision. And think that it's good for this country. You know? Of course, it's just going to be debt they're going to default on anyway. So I guess to that degree, I wish they'd hurry up and do it. But in Washington, you had Powell. He's telling Congress rising rates won't lower gas and food prices. And so you have, you know, they're trying to wage war on inflation, and interest rate hikes could be counterproductive. The White House put the Fed front and center to contain soaring costs, but some prominent lawmakers on the left are not sold on the Fed's aggressive path. They feared the Fed's rate hikes could force the recession and push Americans out of work. We're already heading that direction. It's not going to change. During an intense exchange between Warren yesterday, Fed Chair Jerome Powell admitted that interest rate hikes won't bring down costs for food or gasoline. So who is it going to bring the costs down for, Dave?
Oh, well, you've got the companies, the refiners. We'll talk more about that in the program later today. But these members in both parties criticized Powell for not moving faster and more aggressively, you know, when they were still hanging on to their earlier assessments. That all this was temporary, transitory, to use their words. This nation and its people are going to suffer the consequences for that. And now, you know, in attempting to, you know, get their focus back on the eight ball, there's a good chance they're going to overshoot, and there will not be a soft landing. And just how hard the coming crash is going to be, time will tell. But I saw a little bit of the exchange in replay of the videos, and got a little snarky up there. So we'll see what happens. At least they're being held, their feet are being held to the fire, Melody.
Yeah, but the funny thing is everybody blames Powell for waiting too long, but it was their own little Janet Yellen who was right there flapping and saying it's transitory. None of these politicians on either side ever mentioned anything, or they said, you know, it's just temporary. They never acknowledged it, and they all knew where it was heading, what was going to happen, and that's what's so irritating about those in D.C. on both sides. They keep their mouth shut until they can use it to get their elections and their campaign money coming in. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter and blog produced by Dave Allen. And, you know, there's so much. You can read so much, you know. Supposedly the White House is focusing on gas prices. All they have to do is reverse some of those decisions that they made coming into this administration a year and a half ago. And that would help a lot. And, but they're not going to do that. Because I do believe it is, they're trying to go more to a different energy. And, it just doesn't, the whole thing doesn't make sense. And you just can't keep blaming these oil companies and profits. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit. Just can't keep blaming these oil companies and their profits. This isn't the biggest profits that they ever made. But it makes, they make it sound like, you know, oh my gosh, you know, they're gouging, they're just not gouging us. There's a lot of things that could be done. And as I mentioned earlier, you had oil executives to D.C. today for some face-to-face talks. Maybe that'll help. Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm, though it remains unclear what combination of, you know, carrots and sticks could coax the industry into pumping more crude and selling it more cheaply. Well, how about how about regulations? How about easing up on some of the regulations? How about opening up, instead of closing these places like down in Alaska and these other places, how about opening them up again? Just open them up. It doesn't make sense, Dave. Why they don't reverse some of their decisions they made when they first came into this administration? Because that's when it really started to happen. It didn't happen with Putin. It started way before that. It started from the day they took this administration over. And then next month you have Biden. He's going to travel to Saudi Arabia to ask for more crude oil from them. Maybe he'll bow to them like Obama did. I mean, I wasn't very proud of Trump going over there doing dances with them either. But, I mean, it's just we got it right here at home. Why don't we do it right here at home? And I didn't realize that this energy sector employs 11 million people. So why don't we keep them at work? Anyway, Dave, what say you?
Well, in my own humble opinion, I mean, certainly getting more out of Saudi Arabia, more oil, that is, could help lower prices some.
Why don't we use our own? I don't get it.
Well, refinery capacity is way up there. I mean, that's part of what's going on, is that you know, we'll talk about that.
Yeah, and there's and government doesn't help for new refineries to be built or anything like that. And the Saudis own the biggest refinery here in the United States. Coincidence? So it just doesn't.
I mean, you got to appreciate the politics of the situation, that there's a big push pull between, and it could change the calculus right now because of how high inflation is, and gas in particular. But with the move afoot to transition toward electric fuels and away from fossil fuels in general, that's certainly pitting the oil companies against the environmentalists, and that's just
I don't think that has anything
a function
to do
of the well it's with, exactly
I
what
don't think
it,
it has anything to
on.
Do
what do you think it
Oh, I believe there's a certain push to eliminate the fossil fuels for this new energy. So I don't think it's well, to that degree, yes, that's politics as usual. But then to go on and to hear, you know, these folks saying, oh, it's just because the oil companies are gouging us and so forth. Hey, I have no problem with good, better energy. But it's not the government. You can't force people in to do it, and it shouldn't be played with politics.
But we can't have it both ways either.
Baloney. Why should taxpayers pay for General Motors, for Tesla, for Ford? Why should taxpayers spend billions and billions of their dollars to put up charging stations? Our electricity grid is so outdated. How is our grid going to support all this extra energy that's going to be created? And what I understand,
it's not.
Even the production of recharging these batteries comes from fossil fuels. Our country is we use less fossil fuels than any other country in the world. We don't have manufacturing anymore. So, I mean,
I believe that's an incorrect statement, but that's we
well,
we
that's
can,
just part. That's just can, part.
We can debate that, but we use far more fossil fuel per capita than any other country in the world.
With the Paris Accord, from my understanding, with the Paris Accord, we've done more under that accord than any other country. And you can't compare us to China. China is far worse than what we are.
Oh, heck yes.
So we've done better, and China doesn't have to do anything until, what, 2030 or something? And I don't know the exact terms of that.
Well,
it's been a while
China's
I read
a huge polluter. By the time they start grinding to a halt and, cleaning up the air and water pollution that they've caused. God knows how many years late that will turn out to have been. But I also want to talk about these current proposals to put a pause on gas hikes. Again, we're in an election year, as you said, and it sure sounds good when you hear the president or your member of Congress say, yeah, let's put a halt on this 18% federal tax plus, you know, how depending on where you, what state you live in, it's a lot more in some cases. But, you know, I saw an analysis just this morning that says over the Biden's proposed 3-month period, putting them or not taking the gas tax away, and based on the average household's use of gas for commuting and other purposes, that they'd save roughly $8 a month over the 3-month period, or $25 total. I don't know what that buys you. Sure, you multiply that by 100 million and it sounds like a lot of money, but in the whole scheme of things, it's almost a counterproductive policy change, because among other things, the goal here, while supply is being arbitrarily constrained, is that you want to bring demand down as well, and that's lower, probably that the analysis shows that it's going to increase demand. So I don't think it's a good idea. There are far better ways besides. I mean, at least these gas taxes are earmarked for road and other road and bridge, largely improvements across the country. So at least they serve some useful purposes. Although I do look around my own community and see a small town just ridden with potholes. We're in a tough situation all around, Melody.
Yeah, I know. And it's the only ones who become affected by it is, people. Just the people who, really don't have any other choices. They do have a choice. It's called elections and voting. And even that, though, anymore seems to be a mute point. But
not sure what
because
it gets
a politician,
us.
Yeah, where does it get us? Because those that are running are, worth.
They're beholden to interests that are much more deep pocketed than the vast majority of us everyday types.
And it's just really become a joke anymore. But that joke is on us, and we pay more and more. Hey, green, better energy is great, but not in the manner in which they're doing it, to where people are affected by it. And we've got so many problems in this country, and I'm going to go back to where we can't feed our babies. And it's just another sign, I believe, of the condition of this country. Things are working right and things are good. You don't have these problems. If you have these problems, they're usually, they can be solved or at least, discussed and so forth. But there's no answers anymore to any of our problems. And
well, you know what?
It's a sign.
Yeah, there are answers. It's just that we're so insulated in our tribes and tribalism that we don't listen to one another anymore. And that's where, the solutions are out there for the taking. It's just that we're so afraid of crossing these arbitrary red lines and being called names and being voted out of office. And as a result, what's getting done and what's it doing to this to our nation and our households, our pocketbooks.
I mean, I agree, and it's just, but this nation is so, and it's just divided from the top down. And so as long as I don't know what a common situation to occur will bring us back together. I mean, it will be an event to where we become again, and I'm not sure an event like that exists. Because I think we're so divided in so many ways. Or if that event does happen, it brings us together again. It always used to be like war would always bring people together. I'm not even sure that will anymore. Financial collapse. I mean, there's a lot of things that used to bring Americans together, but it has just gotten so crazy and so divided anymore. I'm not as hopeful as many. Or as some. So we do what we do. We take care of our families. We do the best we can. And for heaven's sakes, get your savings protected. You know where I'm going. We have good days in the stock markets and everybody feels comfortable again. But what has changed? All of those fundamentals are all the same and they continue to get worse. They can make adjustments here. They can make adjustments there. And, oh, my goodness, the stock market was up 800 points. But the fundamentals are all there. Same way with inflation. It's gonna, they're gonna show a number where it's come down and everybody's gonna feel good and everything and everybody will think all is okay. But what's changed? Nothing. Those prices are, you know, they might come down a little, but nothing. Nothing to what they were. It's just like taxes. Taxes always go up. You might think that they adjust them and come down a little, but they'll get you someplace else. So we're all in the same place, and we just doesn't see, it just never seems to get a little bit better. And I you know, here's some, and this is the scary thing. This is really scary for you guys out there who have retirement accounts. The Senate Finance Committee has unanimously approved a series of proposals that make congressional passage of a retirement improvement package more likely this year. Does that want to make you get out of your retirement accounts and into gold? It's actually called EARN Act, Enhancing American Retirement Now. You know, when government wants to enhance something, they're only going to take it away. Now, these are, the measure contains some provisions that are the same or similar to those proposed in the House, which passed the Securing a Strong Retirement Act back in March. Known as Secure 2.0, that bill is intended to build upon the original Secure Act of 2019, which ushered in changes aimed at increasing retirement security by increasing access to workplace saving plans. The EARN Act includes more than 70 proposals aimed at helping more Americans save. How about just paying a better interest rate so we can, you know, maybe and have some good banking laws? The culmination of months of collaboration between just about every member of the committee, both Democrat and Republican. So, you know, when anytime government wants to get involved in money and my money, sorry, don't want to be there, Dave.
Sorry, I haven't seen enough of these bills to know what's in them. I mean, the one provision I do know about provides employers with more incentives to contribute to 401k plans or other savings plans that the employer offers to employees or on behalf of employees who are making student loan payments.
More money, but more bailouts.
Yeah, so I mean that to me suggests that there's gonna be some kind of appropriation subsidy provided to those companies, or some kind of tax deduction or credit for those employers who. It could be that they're gonna raise limits, contribution limits, and I did see they're going to raise. The rate for the minimum required distributions, which is, I think, now is 72.
Yep. Does it sound like it's going to benefit you folks? 1-800-375-4188. Dave will be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of clients. This final segment, call her at 1-800-375-4188. Well, ocean freight rates. Boring topic, but an important one, as it has been since the pandemic began. Long-term ocean freight rates between China and the U.S. West Coast are higher now than spot prices for the first time since April of pandemic year. The average price for long-term contracts on shipments moving in about 3 months or more was about 3% higher on average than the cost for short-term movements on trans-Pacific routes as of earlier this week. Now costs about $8,000 to transport a 40-foot container from China to the U.S.'s largest gateways for trade in the West Coast, namely Long Beach and L.A. Listen to that. It, more than double the roughly $3,100 paid just a year ago. That's closer to three times. Now, meanwhile, prices are almost at $7,770, 47% increase for near-term movements. Cargo owners using the Trans-Pacific trade lane are worried about the expiration of a labor contract for about 22,000 American dock workers coming up next week. The International Longshore and Warehouse Union and Pacific Maritime Association, which represents more than 70 employers, are now negotiating a new contract for thousands of dock workers across 29 West Coast ports, large and small. Both parties last week said they're unlikely to reach a deal by July 1st, but reaffirmed that both sides are committed to avoiding disruptions that would make things worse with the supply chains. So I guess that's a good thing. I mean, who the winners in this freight rate issue? Well, apparently small shippers of cargo that don't have access to that contract market. Also bigger customers of container services, because some of them combine their contracted volumes with spot market exposure on trades that aren't critical to their business. And the losers, well, apparently it's freight forwarders that sell in the spot market. That's the space that they've acquired at a fixed and higher price from a carrier. Sorry. Now, as the job market cools down and inflation continues to heat up, a new survey from Bankrate indicates that side jobs, side hustles, call them what you want, side gigs are a necessity for a growing number of Americans. Former top motivations for these side hustles, like paying off debt and saving, have given way to a more pressing need, making ends meet, the family. Bankrate survey found that 41% of adults with a side job this year need the extra bucks to pay for everyday living expenses. That's up, about a third from 31% before the pandemic began. A lot fewer putting this money towards savings and using it instead for discretionary expending. Ted Rossman, who senior guy at Bankrate, said instead of using this income to boost savings, knock out debt, or pay for a vacation, there's been a big increase of people who simply use these funds to pay for everyday expenses like gas, food, diapers, baby formula if you can find it, and whatnot. Now, in 2019, Bankrate found that almost 40% of side hustlers took on extra work for more spending money, little walking around cash. That number this year is down by 10 percentage points. Of course, inflation partially to blame for some of these shifts. Another 40% of side hustlers are putting in extra time due to inflation. 48% working about the same, and 16% say they're working less. Some of the additional findings, 53% of older millennials aged 33 to 41 need the money to pay for living expenses. It's compared, it's 12 percentage points higher of all other millennials. 48% of women use their side income for living expenses, compared with just 33% of men. Men are also twice as likely as women to use their side job income for savings or debt drawdown. Interestingly, among all adults, almost one-third have a second job this year. And that's actually down from 38% in 2019, but it's way up from 19% in 2017. Now, even though many Americans report feeling the pressure of record high inflation, the decrease since before the pandemic could be because of rising fuel prices, for one, which support a lot of the gig economy in the U.S. Right now, like ride sharing and delivery services like Grubhub, DoorDash. Of course, the price of automobiles haven't been too cooperative the last 2 years either. So that could be wearing on people's minds as they think about, well, let's hold on to my car a little bit longer, which means using them a little bit less. Here's another sign of the housing market turndown. JP Morgan Chase says it's laying off hundreds of home lending employees and reassigning hundreds more as rapidly rising mortgage rates drive down demand in what had been a red hot housing market, as we talked about earlier. The total affected at JP Morgan will be more than 1,000 U.S. workers, about half moved to different divisions within the bank. J.P. Morgan's spokesperson said our staffing decision this week was a result of cyclical changes in the mortgage market, adding the cuts followed the Fed's decision to boost interest rates to tame high inflation. Of course, 30-year mortgages, as Melody mentioned earlier, already more than doubled from their record low early last year. Too big to fail, Wells Fargo, the biggest mortgage lender among U.S. banks, has also been laying off and reassigning employees in its home lending division. And Toyota Motor Corp, has cut its July global production plan by 50,000 vehicles as semiconductor shortages and parts supply disruptions continue to affect output. No word on layoffs at the company. Yet the world's largest car maker by volume, anyway, said it expects to make 800,000 vehicles next month. Company release said as it remains difficult to look ahead due to the shortage of semiconductors, there's a possibility that the production plan may even be lower. Toyota and other car makers, of course, continue to struggle with supply chain disruptions resulting from the pandemic and recent lockdowns in China. Automakers also having to compete for limited semiconductor supplies that remain right now with other manufacturers like consumer electronics device makers. Toyota stuck with its annual global production target of 9.7 million vehicles total. Although the company said that more disruptions could eventually force that number lower. And last today, Peter Coy has an excellent and very insightful story in today's New York Times, controversial. Wish Melody were here to talk about this. I'd like to share with you. Talking about price markups and profits of businesses in the U.S. last year were the highest since at least the 1950s, according to a new analysis published the other day by the Roosevelt Institute. And that's raising questions about a possible relationship between corporate greed and inflation. A simple story of businesses driving up prices to earn more money, according to Mike Consul, one of the paper's authors, who's the Institute's director of macroeconomic analysis. He asks, is greed the sole or main reason for inflation? He answered himself, no, but it's part of a mix of explanations that should be under consideration. Now, the Roosevelt paper sheds light on one of the biggest economic mysteries of last year in this. What's the leading cause of today's high inflation? Is it strong demand, supply shortages, rising profit margins? It's a combination of all three. Well, those who cite strong demand blame the Biden administration, Congress, and the Fed for overstimulating the economy with so much fiscal and monetary stimulus over the past 2 years. Those who cite supply shortages point fingers at disruptions caused by things like the pandemic, Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And of course, foes of corporate bigness focus on the excess profits theory. And there's some evidence for all three explanations. That's according to another paper called Prices, Profits, and Power, an analysis of 2021 firm-level markups. That's written by Consul and Ligo Luciani, who's the director of the Roosevelt Institute's corporate power team. Now, corporate net profit margin, that's the net, what remains after tax of the profit divided by a company's sales. That's the profit margin. Consul and Luciani used data from the CompuStat unit of S&P Global that goes back to 1955. They also looked at companies' markup, which is the difference between the prices they charge and their costs, which they define as the cost of goods sold and labor, but not sales and other administrative expenses. Now, supporting the strong demand theory of inflation is the fact that increases in markups were widespread among many types and many sizes of companies. And that suggests that the economy-wide strength in the demand for goods and services was an important factor in price increases. At the same time, markups increased more sharply in industries that experienced disruptions, indicating that supply chain problems were also a factor in inflation. Among the sectors with big markups were real estate, mining, quarrying, and oil and gas extraction. The biggest markup increases that the authors found was actually in finance and insurance, which is a bit strange since that sector wasn't obviously bottlenecked with various supply chain issues. Third explanation now, rising profit margin. It's not an alternative, but rather a supplement to the demand and supply explanations. It says the company seized the opportunity of the strong demand and weak supply to increase their profits. Theory of opportunism. Supporting that theory is the authors finding that after adjustment for size, companies that increased prices before 2021 were the most likely to increase prices in 2021. That indicates that they had a position in the market that made it easier for them to impose price increases and make them stick. Alconso and Luciani used a methodology that was developed for another influential article that was peer-reviewed in the Journal of Economics in 2020. The big difference is that they find a gradual increase from 1980 to 2015. Consul said their own study showed this was very abrupt and sudden in 2021. In any event, in terms of what this shows for public policy, Consul said it shows that there's room for these profit margins to come down through competition, antitrust enforcement, or presidential jawboning, which he calls the bully pulpit. He said there are already signs in the national accounts data, not included in the Roosevelt paper, that profit margins already retreated a little bit in the first quarter this year, and that they may be shrinking even a little bit more in the second quarter. No breakdown on industries there. Consul and Luciani conclude that since markups are unusually and suddenly high, there's room for reversing them with little economic harm and likely societal benefit. That includes lower prices in the short term and less inequality and more innovation in the long run. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Papers posted at Roosevelt Institute website, RooseveltInstituteOneWord.org. And that's all the time we have for today's program. Melody, be back tomorrow to send us into the holiday weekend with Butch. I'm off on a family vacation next week, so I'll talk with you after the 4th. But be on the lookout for our weekly blog and your email tomorrow, and for our American Survival Newsletter on the 4th of July Monday. Thanks, as always, to our engineer, Todd, and to you for turning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye. Man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball.